Hi, everybody. My name's Raquel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Raquel.
Thank you, Sandy, for asking me to speak. It's always a pleasure to have the opportunity to be able to stand in a room with sober people, like-minded, and to remember how I got here, you know? So I'm going to try my best to share a little bit of my experience, a little bit of my strength and hope with you tonight. I was born and raised in Newfoundland. That's where I'm from. That's where I started drinking. That's where I grew up in a dysfunctional family. I'm the youngest of five children. And I grew up with some abuse. I grew up very neglected. I felt very unloved as a child, very unwanted. I felt very strange. I remember being very young, maybe even 4 or 5 years old, and being either convinced that I was adopted or convinced that I was an alien that had been found by my parents, that I didn't even belong to this planet. That was how separate I felt from the human race and society, and even just my family. I always felt like my family wasn't even really a family. We were just a bunch of people that got thrown into a house together. Seven of us pretty much just fighting over attention and food and just everything. My parents, as long as I can ever remember, were in the throes of a divorce. And my mother tells me that I was separated from her when I was about 1.5, 2 years old, because my father got a court order, some issues of mental illness, and she always thinks that that has something to do with all the problems I have. But long story short, I was taken from my family by child services when I was about 11 years old. So I spent a fair amount of time in the system. And if any of you know what's involved in that, it's just a lot of scrutiny, a lot of barriers, a lot of locked, closed doors. And you're just searching for relief, you know, any way you can. And it was a very, very easy outlet for me to find drugs and alcohol at a very young age, you know. In Newfoundland, it's a drinking culture. I got drunk for the first time when I was about 9 years old. It was a bit of a separate experience. I drank my mom's beer. I wanted to know what it was like to get drunk. My parents aren't alcoholics. They have lots of problems, but they're not alcoholics. But in early adolescence was when the drinking in the woods kind of began, you know, just getting totally wasted. And right from the get-go, I loved it. I loved to party. I loved drinking. The hardest stuff that I could get, you know, beer was very often just not even interesting to me. If that was the only thing available, of course, I would drink it. But I always wanted something harder. And I would always go until the last drink, the last person was standing. I wound up in hospitals numerous times when I was a teenager. If it wasn't alcohol poisoning, it was a suicide attempt. And that pretty much marks, that's pretty much my adolescence right there. I'm fortunate. I know what a fortunate human being I am for so many reasons. To be sober today, I know how lucky I am. I really, really know how lucky I am. But I did grow up in, an educated environment of sorts. So I'm lucky to have that. I was taught from a young age to play instruments. I play the cello and the piano, and I am a singer. And I always did well in school. I always managed to take care of myself regardless of how much partying I did do. So I made it through high school surprisingly well when I went. I always managed to show up for the exams and do what needed to be done. And I was being a musician too. I mean, I started working and playing in bars at the age of about, 15. So I was in that environment from a fairly young age, and it was just so normal to me. It was normal and it was natural, and I had a huge capacity to drink. I mean, I'm a big girl. I could really handle liquor, and when you start young, I guess you get a tolerance. So, it was not a problem for me to rationalize getting sick, even winding up in an ambulance with alcohol poisoning. I'm still not putting two and two together. I'm like, I don't have a problem, Like, how far do you have to go? And I guess I'll try and tell you. But university, obviously, drinking becomes even more accepted in a strange way. It's like, the social aspect of academia is big, especially depending on what department you're in. The drinking is big. I moved here to Montreal when I was 19, and that's when things really started to get out of hand. I was away from everything that I'd ever known in my life. Newfoundland, St. John's, is a relatively small place, and I grew up, with the people that I went to kindergarten with all the way up, So I just left. I came here. I got completely wasted on the plane, I missed my flight in Halifax, actually. I got off the plane to drink at the bar in Halifax, and I missed my connection. And so I showed up in Montreal, kind of drunk, mostly hungover at that point. And it was just, life began, so to speak. My alcoholic, addictive experience just really started to go for it, I came here to study at Concordia, and I did a year there and was extremely unhappy with it, and didn't do any more. So what did I do then? I was hanging out in a lot of bars, playing cello on the street for money, which was actually a pretty decent job. I've never lacked for being able to take care of myself. I guess I had that instinct from a young age, but my restless, irritable, and discontent self decided to just run away from everything. So I decided to go to a family reunion in Montana and hitchhike around the states for the next year. And that's what I did. So I went to the West Coast and spent some pretty crazy times in a lot of the major cities around there, just Portland and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and made my way to Las Vegas and spent a few months there, and various places in Nevada and New Orleans, New York, and then back to Montreal. So you can probably imagine some of the trouble that I got into going there. I had drug dealer boyfriends. I was riding around on stolen motorcycles, stolen cars with guns in the trunk, and not really caring about anyone or anything, and least of all myself, I've had some bad things happen to me, I found myself in situations where my power was gone because I gave it up, And it's strange, because I talk about it now, and it's almost like, it's like I'm not that person anymore, and in a weird way, it's almost like those things didn't even happen to me. But, you know, they did, and they're my experience, and that's what I built from. Drugs came in probably the heaviest in New Orleans, where I really, really discovered crystal meth, and spent some time there, and made it back to Montreal kind of by the skin of my teeth, because my nut boyfriend at the time started like chasing me around there. It was a bad scene. So I kind of came back to Montreal with my tail between my legs, so to speak, but not really, because as soon as I got back here, I called this guy that I knew that I had met before I left, and immediately got into a long-term codependent relationship, which for any alcoholic is probably the most useful thing that you can do. Somebody who is willing to take care of you and do anything that needs to be done to make sure that you're all right and that you get your booze. And that's pretty much what happened for 5 years. I was with this wonderful man who enabled my addiction, and as long as I was compliant and complacent and, you know, a fairly good little girl, then, you know, we had a very mutually exclusive relationship, so to speak. I've always maintained being a performer. I play music. I sing jazz. I sing rock. Play the piano. I play the cello. I've always worked in bar atmospheres. I've always worked as a waitress, whether it's been in a restaurant or in a bar. So I was living a very hand-to-mouth life, you know? Just kind of getting what I needed to get by. And just kind of a zombie, you know? How much time do I have? How does this work? Okay. Let's see. Let's get to the good stuff, or the bad stuff first. I didn't come into the rooms right away. Okay. My sobriety date is June 12, 2004. I guess that's correct. So I'm a little over 2 years sober now. And when I hit my bottom, I've had a couple of bottoms, but the bottom that really got me sober was on my birthday, my 26th birthday. And I was so drunk and coked out that I wanted to kill myself. And the thing was is that this was not a new thing, you know. This was these nights of, oh, fuck, here I am again, were becoming more frequent. They were coming closer together. It was just, you know, the last 2 or 3 years before I came to the room were just spiral down. And, you know, who's to say, I mean, what's a high bottom, what's a low bottom? I don't think that I'm I didn't wind up on the street, you know, in a gutter, but I think I went pretty low. I think I went pretty damn low because my quality of life was just so terrible. You know, yeah, I had food in the fridge, which was provided by, you know, this guy. That's another thing. I'm master manipulator. I could always get what I wanted, and that's another issue. But my quality of life was really bad. There's just no two ways around it. I was not feeling much of anything. I was numbing it. If it wasn't alcohol, it was drugs. It was food. It was sex. I was not living life at all. I was just a thing walking around consuming substance. So there I was. I wanted to die yet again, and you know, something happened. Something happened either here in my head or here in my heart, and in an instant, I guess I did step one. And I really, for the really first time in my life, really conceded to my innermost self that I had a huge problem and that I wasn't cutting it by myself. You know, whatever solution was out there, I wasn't able to do it myself. So I made a phone call. And I made a phone call to a kids' help phone. And because it was, I could remember that number. I called it a number of times in my adolescence. I'm too old to phone. You're not supposed to phone if you're over 21. But the person I got on the phone was really kind with me and sent me in the right direction, and I got to Foster Pavilion. And I did weekly therapy there, and I got a very good counselor who eventually gave me the courage and the tools to have yet another bad night of drinking. And that one morning, I woke up and I knew I was done. I didn't know I was done forever, but I certainly knew, okay, I'm finally going to try. I'm going to try and not drink, you know. I'm just going to really actually try that. And so I did. And a day turned into a week, and a week turned into a month. And around 3 months, I was going to Foster, and people around me were slipping, and Foster's great. But my counselor even said that she felt that I had outgrown that, and people right, left, and center were saying, go to AA, go to AA, and I was like, fuck you, I don't want to go to this. Bunch of Bible thumpers. And, well, here I am. Here I am. And I'm really happy to be here today. And AA is my design for living. AA is a huge part of my life. All my phone numbers in my book, all of my close friends, not every single last one, but I'd be willing to say at least 50 to 70% of my life, my social life, is AA and people in AA. I have a fantastic sponsor who came to me at just the right time and said just the right thing to launch me on another, upswing of sobriety. It's been very difficult for me. I never had any kind of spirituality or God in my life, ever. And just this past February, I think it was, I actually finally really got a higher power. It wasn't there. And I was suffering because of it. My program was not working as well as it could. I was fighting it. It was pretty classic. It was like I had the emergency brake on in the car, and when I finally let that emergency brake go, my quality of sobriety has increased tenfold by opening my heart enough that there was room for God to enter, because there was never room for that before. I'm so grateful for that experience. I mean, I've had countless spiritual experiences within these rooms, with the people that I've met in these rooms. I have a life today that I never dreamed I would have, a quality of life, the ability to communicate with people, my family. Me and my mom have a relationship. You know, I didn't talk to her for quite a few years. I hated my family. I resented them so much. I'm still working on some of that. But I was very scapegoated by my family. And they still, you know, we have our patterns, you know. And it develops over years. You have a dance with, your close relationships, you know, whether it's a husband, wife, mother-father, and it's hard to break those patterns. And to know that I have the tools to break them, and the awareness to recognize that I maybe might be the only one who can, because somebody else doesn't have the gift that I've been given, which is a fellowship like this, and the tools that, you know, this program offers us on a silver platter, if we're only willing, you know, willing to take it or open your heart. I wish that there was some way that I could explain to a newcomer how a spiritual experience happens, because it's not something that can ever be forced. The only thing that I can say with real certainty is certainty is that I've had countless spiritual experiences, and my life is filled with this thing that I choose to call God. I've become comfortable with that term. I wasn't before, but I am now. My heart and my life and my actions are filled with this thing, love, you know, love or God or good orderly direction. And, you know, I hear the voice in my head, maybe it's my will saying, oh, do this bad thing or do this wrong thing or don't do what you're supposed to do. And then there's the God voice that's saying, no, do what, you know, do the right thing, you know. Do the next right thing. I know the slogans, but they really do work, you know. There's something to be said for discipline and repetition. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to wrap it up. I always feel I'm having a great time in sobriety right now. Just really wonderful. I'm very creative, having some great things happen in my life. And I just have enormous gratitude for this fellowship and for this room. And I don't know what else to say, really. Just everybody, love life, and thank you, Sandy, for asking me to speak. Thanks very much.